Wonderful. You can be seated. Hey, nice to have you here. And we said last week, if you were here last week, we said the stories in the Bible serve as a mirror for us, but a window into God. So on the horizontal level, they become a mirror for us, understanding some deep lessons as people are struggling or people are living their lives, and we can resonate with what it is that they're living with. And at the same time, it teaches us some truths about God as well. And if we leave the story just on the horizontal level, we're going to miss some very important lessons about what it means to be in relationship with God, what it means for faith, and all those other beautiful things that a lot of these stories come out of. And in fact, if you've ever struggled, and the passage we're going to look at today is a really powerful passage. If you've ever struggled with doubt, if you've ever struggled with injustice, if you've ever struggled with fairness, those whole questions, if you ever struggled with the sovereignty of God, okay, this passage is really going to speak to you this morning, because it's going to resonate so much with, I think, many thoughts or many circumstances and situations that we've all struggled with at one time or another. In fact, I remember my very first lesson in fairness, you know, because, as kids, we want to be fair. And I remember my younger brother and I think maybe we were 12, and we went to my parents, and I said, we want everything to be fair between us, because he felt like he was getting less of something, and I was getting more, and I felt I was getting more of something. Now, if you knew my dad, he was kind of a cheeky guy, and he gave us exactly what we asked for. You guys can't even imagine, right? Right? Like, we had exactly the same clothes on all the time. And I'm talking underwear and socks, too. Like, my dad said, okay, you want it fair? I'll give you fair. And everything, mealtime, exactly the same. You measure it, like, that's the way my dad. And what I thought was a big victory for fairness soon got really creepy, you know? So that was my first lesson in fairness. And you know, we've all lived long enough to see that sometimes fairness isn't the best way to go. Okay, so we're looking at this beautiful, beautiful psalm. It's not actually a story, but what it is, it's a season in a person's life. And we're going to look at Psalm 73, and it's one of my favorite psalms, and it's really powerful. And I want to walk us through this psalm, because I think as we begin reading through it, most of us, and not all of us, have had these very same sentiments. So if we could begin at Psalm 73. Again, I want to reiterate, the biblical stories serve as a mirror for us, but also as a window into God. And as we read this, if we can keep those two levels and understand it, okay? Here's a psalm of Asaph. Truly God is good to Israel, to those whose hearts are pure. But as for me, that's a very important line, but as for me, I almost lost my footing. My feet were slipping and I was almost gone. For I envied the proud when I saw them prosper despite their wickedness. They seem to live such painless lives. Their bodies are so healthy and strong. They don't have troubles like other people. They're not plagued with problems like everyone else. They wear pride like a jeweled necklace and clothe themselves with cruelty. These fat cats have everything their hearts could ever wish for. They scoff and speak only evil. In their pride, they seek to crush others. They boast against the very heavens, and their words strut throughout the earth. And so the people are dismayed and confused, drinking in all their words. What does God know, they ask? Does the Most High even know what's happening? Look at these wicked people, enjoying a life of ease while their riches multiply. Don't put up your hand, but have you ever thought that? Right? Isn't that beautiful? Like, how many of us have ever had those thoughts go through our mind? I think it's just such a beautiful picture. Thousands of years ago that this was written, and for many of us today, we can still resonate with those words. You know, there's two theological truths that I think are very difficult for people to assimilate in their lives. No matter how long you've been a Christian, no matter how long you've been a believer, no matter how long you've been a follower of Jesus Christ, here's the reality. The two theological truths that are very difficult for us to live fully in our lives is, number one, that God is good, and all that God does is goodness. If we're brutally honest, we are going to struggle with those two theological truths in a very real way, that God is good and that everything God does is goodness. Because for many of us, we can look around, we can see what's happening all around us, and we can say, you know what, I don't really believe that. In fact, I can look around and I can see the very people that scoff at God, the very people that don't care about God, the very people that God should be judging, and yet nothing seems to happen, and nothing seems to bother these particular people. We've all been there. It's at the very heart of what this psalmist is talking about. I think it's such a powerful testimony to the things that could cause us to doubt, cause us to say, where's the justice? Cause us to say, are things really fair? Does God even know what's going on? Does God even care? If God is a God who is good, if God is a God who loves us, if God is a God that wants the very best for us, how can this go on? We've all been there. We've all asked those. Asaph looks around him, and to his dismay, it appears that the very people that God should be dealing with are the very people that are doing the very best. The very best. You know, I think I'm going to make an assumption here, but I think you can get yourself into such a situation, into such a state, that you start looking at things and over-glamorizing what their lives are like. Because you can get so much doubt about what you're seeing and the circumstances around you that suddenly you think it's far better on the other side than it is for you. Notice how many times in that particular passage Asaph's going, they have it better than me. They get away with this. They don't have the same struggles I have. They, you know, can get away with all of this. They have it much easier. They can make it happen. All of that. And when that happens, a danger happens. When you start looking outside that way, what eventually happens is what we're going to see very, very soon in the psalm is that it starts coming back upon us. Let me take you to the next part of the psalm. Notice what happens right here to Asaph. He's talking about they. All of a sudden, look what he does. Did I keep my heart pure for nothing? Did I keep myself innocent for no reason? I get nothing but trouble all day long. Every morning brings me pain. If I had really spoken this way to others, I would have been a traitor to your people. So I tried to understand why the wicked prosper. But what a difficult task it is. Isn't that exactly what happens to us? When we start looking at others, we see them better off. We don't see them getting the same kind of judgment or justice, or we see things as unfair, and we see things as not going as they should be. And doesn't that happen to something inside of us? We start saying, what's wrong with me? Why am I trying to do the right thing? Why am I trying to stay on the straight and narrow? Why should I keep going on? Look how, you know, is it doing me any good? That's exactly what Asaph is struggling with here. But you know what's really crazy to me? Do you know who Asaph is? This is the part that really gets me. If you know anything about this name, he is the worship leader. He is the one in the temple who is leading the worship of God's people, who is struggling with doubt. His whole family lineage are the music makers from the time of King David. And here he is, this name that is attached to the very worship of God, who is struggling the most with what he sees around him. It's surprising. It is absolutely surprising that it's this man who you would least expect to have these doubts and the stuff swirling in his own mind, doubting his own goodness, doubting the own reasons for doing what he's doing, doubting the very value that he has for himself. And yet, here he is, as he's on this, if the worship leaders were up here right now, leading us in worship, and they're looking out and they're saying, why do you have it better off? Look at what I'm doing. Look at all that I'm endeavoring to do in my life. Why is it sure I keep myself pure? Why is it that I do the right thing? How many of us have ever said, why am I going to do the right thing? Where's it going to get me? That's how you know we live in a sinful world. When doing the right thing is the hard thing. That's how we know when we live in a sinful world. That doing the right thing is often the thing that is going to be the hardest thing. You know, this psalm is crafted so beautifully. We just saw the way that Asaph is looking at the situation and the circumstances around him, pointing his finger at the theys who have it better off than he, suddenly seeing himself as less, and suddenly seeing at why he should bother. But something happens here in verse 17, and this is the verse that is the pinnacle verse in the entire psalm. At verse 17, here's this switch that happens. He says, then I went into your sanctuary, O God, and I finally understood the destiny of the wicked. Isn't that beautiful? That here he is in all his doubt, in all his self-doubt, suddenly he enters into the sanctuary, he enters into the very place where God dwells, the very place where they worship God together, the very place where God's people assemble together. And what he does is he separates the reality of the people around him, and he looks up and he sees God, and he recognizes the character and the nature of God, and he realizes who God is. And suddenly it all makes sense. There is something about looking up. There is something about getting beyond the horizontal. There's something about seeing God for who he is. There's something about understanding the nature of what life is all about and how this is really a test for the end that changes the whole dynamic of how we live. But all his doubts, for all his struggles, for all his envy, all his self-doubt that he has, he enters into the sanctuary of God, and suddenly all of that is put into perspective. Have you ever had a moment where you thought one way and then you got a whole different perspective and suddenly the world was totally different? Have you ever had that happen? Have you ever heard a truth that you wish you had known years before because it changed everything? That's what happens to Asaph. There's a moment, it's a defining moment for him. And I don't know about you, but I know when I became a believer, it's like everything that I knew beforehand suddenly didn't seem real. It wasn't even logical. It wasn't even logical. And for Asaph, this is exactly what happens. And you know what? Here's the other thing. Asaph understands only a small part of God. But he understands enough about God to make everything that he had about his doubts okay. See, we want to understand everything about God before our doubts become okay. But the reality is, Asaph, going into the sanctuary, had enough and understood enough about God to make all the doubts okay. And I'm not saying they went away totally, but he understood something very important about God, about the nature of what was going to happen to the individuals who didn't care about God, that made his life okay, that made what he was doing all right, which kept his foot on the path, which allowed him to walk in holiness, which allowed him to walk in faith, which allowed him to see God and to be faithful to God and not allow himself to have the doubt take him off the course. And sometimes we need a vision of God and be reminded of who God is and be reminded of what God has done in our lives to get us back on track. Because faith and doubt build on each other. If you doubt long enough, everything you see will be filled with doubt. That's the reality. And the same is true with faith. The longer you allow faith to build on to faith and to build on to faith, things that used to be troublesome for you no longer apply, are no longer bothersome, no longer steer you off course. But that's the reality. I remember one time staring at this beautiful sunset scenery, edge of a lake. It was an absolute pristine situation. Have you ever been in a situation like that where you're looking at something very beautiful and you're saying, oh, God is amazing. You know, everything about this speaks about God. And the person standing right beside you says, boy, isn't it great? This shows that God doesn't exist at all. You ever been in a situation like that? You know, for one person, it's like it's total proof that God doesn't exist. And for another person, it's like this is filled with God everywhere. Absolutely. What happens? But he goes on. When he gets to this point, he goes on, truly you have put them on a slippery path and send them sliding over the cliff to destruction. In an instant, they are destroyed, completely swept away by terrors. When you arise, O Lord, you will laugh at their silly ideas as a person laughs at dreams in the morning. For Asaph, he comes to the realization that God is just, that a time will come where God will act in judgment. And for Asaph, it's okay. For Asaph, he realizes that this is not all there is right here and right now. You can live for right here, right now. You can enjoy life for right here, right now. God will bless that. But to do it without caring whatsoever about God. Without caring whatsoever about God. You see, that's what happens with us. If we allow doubts too long into our lives, it'll disorient us. If doubts are allowed to take over everything in our lives, what happens is it disorients us from the reality. It takes away a foundation. And suddenly, as I said before, doubt seems to build on doubt, this seems to build on doubt. And over time, everything you look at will be filled with cynicism, doubt, and you'll have trouble understanding how even God can exist. Doubt has its place, but doubt allowed to go for too long without coming to a place where you see God. You know, this is one of the reasons I'm a big advocate for church. And it's not because I'm the pastor and it's all about bringing people to church and all that kind of stuff. But this is a place where together, right, we can work together at building each other's faith. There are times in your life where you're going to be struggling. You're going to wonder if God even cares about you. You're going to be wondering if God even loves you. You're going to wonder if God has any ability to take care of your problems. But isn't it true? Have you ever had this happen where somebody in the church comes alongside and is Jesus for you in your life? What difference did that make? What difference did that make? See, that's why I believe so much in the church, because if you're left on your own, and as time builds on your own, and you build doubt into your life on your own, eventually what will happen is you'll drift away altogether. And that's the reality about life, because we can look at the circumstances around us. We can look at the situation around us. And after a while, we can get so cynical that we can forget that God even exists. And we can even question whether or not God exists. And we can be like Asaph, who looked out and for a moment forgot all about God and the difference that it made. I think that's the part of the church that I love the most. That in the midst of the struggles, in the midst of the difficulties of life, that when we come together, love is exemplified. Love is exemplified. And then even if we're having struggles, others will come along and carry us. I've always said that the most powerful gift that God has given us as the church is the gift of encouragement. I've always believed that that's the most powerful gift that we have as people, one to another, is encouragement. And you know what I love about encouragement? You don't need special training to encourage another person. You don't need to take a special class. You don't need an invitation to encourage another person. You can do it at any point in time. It doesn't cost you anything. Right? Encouragement is such a powerful gift. And you know, when encouragement happens, you can take an individual who is starting to slide and move them into a place of incredible hope just by encouraging them. And I think that's an incredible gift that God has given the church, is the gift of encouragement. Because honestly, we've all had our Asaph moments, haven't we? Even up here? Even up here? And we can totally understand why. You know, the older I've gotten, the less news I watch. I don't know about you, but yeah. Yeah, you know where I'm going. I know myself, the tendency I have, so I just try and avoid the news because it's just depressing. Right? But watch how Asaph, as we finish off the psalm, watch what he says. Then I realized he's gone from they. I know the fate of they. Notice this again, and now he comes back to himself. This is what happens when you get the right perspective about out there, when you get the right perspective about they, look what happens to him. Then I realized that my heart was bitter, and I was all torn up inside. Wow. I was so foolish and ignorant. I must have seemed like a senseless animal to you. Yet I still belong to you. You hold my right hand. You guide me with your counsel, leading me to a glorious destiny. I love this line. Whom have I in heaven but you? Where would we be without God? I desire you more than anything on earth. How many of us can get to that point? Whom do I desire more than you? My health may fail and my spirit may grow weak, but God remains the strength of my heart. He is mine forever. And those who desert him will perish, but for you destroy those who abandon you. But as for me, how good it is to be near God. I have made the sovereign Lord my shelter, and I will tell everyone about the wonderful things you do. Isn't that amazing? See how it moves from they to I, me? And it progresses in that way. And when we allow self-doubt in that to take over our lives, notice the line, where is it again? But as for me, it happened at the beginning of the psalm, and here it happens at the end. Now, I think that's a beautiful psalm, and that's a beautiful reflection of a season in a person's life where they went from doubt and how it ate them up inside. And then when they got the proper perspective, when they saw the value of their faith and how it changed the perspective of what is out there, and it changed the perspective of what happened inside of them. It's a very powerful psalm. And most of us reading that psalm can resonate so much with it. Okay? So, as we close this morning, I want to do a little test. We're going to test you this morning. Are you ready for a test? All right. We're going to put up a slide. Go ahead, James. You can put it up. Here's our test this morning. Now, this was used, by the way. Companies used to use this a number of years ago. I think some still do. Their Salesforce. It used to be a test for the Salesforce. Now, a lot of you are looking at this going, what kind of a test is this? But if I was to ask you, what do you see, what would you say to me? You're really afraid to say it, aren't you? Okay, for those listening online, I'm going to have to explain it. It's a white screen with an orange circle in the corner. Okay, how many of you see the orange circle? Okay? All right? Now, when they did this as a test to the sales force, and they asked the salesman, what do you see? And if the salesman said, I see an orange circle in the bottom left-hand corner, do you know what they would do? They would say, you failed the test because you focused on the orange and you missed the opportunities of the whole white screen that was around it. How many of you said the white screen first? No. No, I can't say it after, right? But isn't that such a cool test? Isn't that what happens? How many of us focus on the orange circle? And we get so, bent on the orange circle that we miss everything else that are possibilities and probabilities around us. How many of us do that? And that's what Asaph did for a moment, by the way. For a moment, all Asaph saw was the orange circle. For a moment, that's what he saw. And then when he walked into the sanctuary, what he saw beyond that was the white screen of probabilities and a much bigger God than we give him. And that's what happens in our own lives. We can forget how big God is. We can forget how great God is. We can forget how God is sovereign, how God is in control. And we can get so focused on the orange circle that we can miss God altogether because we get so enamored with the unfairness and the injustice and the doubt that happens in our lives. And yet God is sovereign over both the opportunities and the orange circle. And that's what happened. Because we saw Asaph get disoriented for a moment. Then when he walked into the sanctuary and he realized who God was, he got reoriented. And he realized that the white space was where he needed to be. So you can score yourself if you want. I won't collect the tests afterwards. But ask yourself this morning, what am I more focused on? A big God, the big possibilities, how God can bring change into the world, or am I so discouraged with the self-doubt? Am I so discouraged by what I see? Am I so disillusioned by what I see? Is the injustice gotten to me to such a point that I have forgotten that as the people of God, we can really make a difference in the world? You heard, from Dave earlier, that was just unbelievable. That one bag of contraband, right, can make so much of a difference. Imagine if all of us did not allow the doubt to overwhelm us and saw the white space as the place that we need to be. Let's pray.